Custer, coordinator of the International Stuttering Awareness Day online conferences. ISAD began in 1998, and it recognizes the growing alliance between speech-language professionals and consumers. The theme of ISAD for this year is People Who Stutter Inspire. The online conferences have been an integral part of ISAD for the past 13 years. The freely available conferences have a variety of papers written in a reader-friendly style by professionals and consumers. Each paper has an easy-to-use threaded discussion attached where participants can interact with the authors. This year's conference will open October 1st and conclude on International Stuttering Awareness Day, October 22nd. To access the conference, go to the Stuttering Homepage, www.stutteringhomepage.com.
Good morning, everybody. If you're not listening to this podcast in the morning, then you can pretend it's the morning. This is Stutter Talk. I am Eric Jackson. Here is always co-host Peter Reitzis. What's up?
Hey, guys. Hey, doing good. Doing well.
Doing well. And our special guest, our return guest, Dr. Charlie Osborne, who is a speech pathologist, who is a clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin, who's been working with people who stutter for over 20 years. Charlie, it's nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, and thanks for the honorary doctorate, too, there. I like that. I have a master's.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I get to know people in this field, and you just assume things, I say, or something, you know? Oh, yeah, he's definitely a doctor.
Yeah, whatever.
So, Charlie, I'm going to ask you a question, because if I ask Eric, he's just going to tell me it's a terrible idea. So I'm going to ask you, what do you think of a new tagline for Stutter Talk? Something like this: Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering, one podcast at a time.
I like that.
Eric, Charlie says he likes it. What do you think?
You set it up like that, Peter. What a low move.
Because any tagline I suggest, you say is horrible.
That is so untrue. I say they're horrible when they're horrible. That's good.
Right. Okay, so changing how you think about stuttering, one podcast at a time.
Well, we should mention that this is episode 231. We'll be referencing episode 227 in this episode, but we'll get to that. For September 26, 2010.
Are you waiting for me, Eric? Okay, I'm going to jump right in.
It's a jilted show already today.
Even though we are still in September, we are going to announce a few days early the Stutter Talk suggested or recommended resource of the month. And for October 2010, our resource of the month is the International Stuttering Awareness Day online conferences hosted at www.stutteringhomepage.com. Now, this year, starting October 1st and going to October 22nd live, will be the 13th annual ISAD online conference, and this year's theme is People Who Stutter Inspire. The conferences are coordinated by Judy Custer, who is the web weaver at the Stuttering Homepage. And people have accessed this conference from over 155 different countries. So basically, what the conference is that people who stutter, professionals in the field, parents, and anybody in the stuttering community is invited to write papers and presentations about stuttering. And then there are threaded discussions for each presentation where people who read them can then make comments, ask questions. And there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of participation. And it's just a really rich conference. The archives are wonderful. This year, and as in many years past, Charlie Osborne, our guest, is one of the professionals who will be taking questions at the conference. What do you want to say about the ISAD conferences, Charlie?
Well, there's a lot to say, actually. I mean, I think it's such an enriching experience for anyone who participates, whether you've been in the stuttering community for a long time or, for example, my class. I have a class of 30 students, and I have a project that requires them to take part in the conference. And from just the feedback I've received from former students, it's just a really good experience for them to begin to understand about stuttering and people who stutter and people who and families who are involved with their kids. And it's, I can't say enough good things about it. And I think the price is right too. I mean, it's free.
Mm. October 1st through the 22nd, it'll be live. So if you ask a question or make a comment within that time period, then the professors and the authors of the presentations will be able to respond. And they're archived. Well, they've been archived now for 13 years, or going on 13 years. So those presentations and those threaded discussions are still up there.
Sweet.
Yes.
It is the fall season right now, Peter, and one of the things that I love about the fall season, besides the weather, we have talked extensively on the show about how we both hate the summer.
Yes.
I love football season, and Stutter Talk, as we have mentioned before, has a fantasy football league. So I just quickly want to go through what's happening right now. We've had 2 weeks. Our third week starts today in a couple hours. But right now, leading the way, leading the standings, is Dave Friedman and his team, Chelsea Chatters. And closely behind him, which is a shock to the entire league, the Deep Dish Stutterers, which is your team, Peter.
Yes, yes, my team of warriors. Yes, we're doing well.
Followed by the Wargs, the Brooklyn Mudflaps, who are my team, the Long Island Hammerheads, Orlando Fluency Shapers, the Jacksonville Hurricanes, Team Olds, Team Ferone, and leading the bottom of the pile. Now, we picked some smart people for the B team, right, Peter?
Yes, we did.
Well, in 10th and 11th place are our two B teams in the Fantasy Football League. So while they have titillating conversations on the air, they do not know how to manage a fantasy football team.
But they have great helmet design, so. You know.
That's true. And last but not least in the standings is our friend Jamie Rocchio's team. So I don't know what to say about that. Quickly, the matchups for this week will be the Brooklyn Mudflaps at the Big Cats, which is the B team of Roisin and Karen Herring. Team Olds at the Minnesota Blockers, who is Joel Cordy. Team Ferone at the Deep Dish Stutterers, Peter. Big week for you. The Orlando Fluency Shapers, Mike.
Well, I'm already projected to have something like a 75-point victory, so I'm not too worried at the moment.
Okay. Orlando Fluency Shapers at Chelsea Chatters, Jacksonville Hurricanes, Rob Lowe, at the Long Island Hammerheads, who is Bradley's team, my brother, and the Wargs at J-May Party, who is Jamie's team. So I wish everybody the best of luck. I will probably, again, have the most points for the week in the league, and I'm slowly climbing the standings.
Well, I just want to congratulate you, Eric, on handling your mediocre season as well as you are. I just think it's a testament to what a good sport you are.
Thank you very much. Now, let's get into things. We had a conversation, Peter and I had a conversation on, actually, when was this, Peter?
This was a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
About 2 weeks ago or so.
It, It was right after we did episode 227, where Charlie was a guest on. And rather than say anything, why don't we just go right into it and play this? It's about 20 minutes or so. We're going to play it, and then we're going to come back and talk about it.
Talk to Charlie about it.
And then we're going to come back to talk to Charlie about it.
On episode 227, we spoke to our wonderful friend, really great smart dude, Charlie Osborne. And Charlie had some, as he often does, some very disfluent speech. So we put together a short reel. How's that, Eric? A reel, a clip. Yeah,
it's I think it's funny though. It's like a part of this sounds like we're calling Charlie out or something. Oh, but we're not doing that at all.
No.
He says, you know, yes, I have very disfluent. Disfluent speech.
Yeah. We talked to Charlie on the phone about this show idea, and he loves it. Yeah. So this is why we're doing it. So we talked to Charlie, and here's the plan we worked out with Charlie. We're going to talk with our good friend Jared about Charlie's speech. So first we're going to play a clip, several clips put together, of Charlie speaking on Stutter Talk. We tried to pick some of his most disfluent moments. And what we're going to do is talk about it and then send the clip, then send the show to Charlie so Charlie can hear our thoughts. Then we're going to invite Charlie on. Mm. And where this really came from is after Eric and I spoke to Charlie on episode 227, Eric and I were talking on the phone, and Eric basically said to me, "Dude, that guy stutters." And I said, "I don't think so." And then we both said, "Wait, let's do this on air." So, Eric, let's play the clip, and then we'll talk about it.
I got tired of telling students when I supervised in clinic, they were, you know, "Oh, that was really fluent." And it just became such an, I don't know what the word, but I would have such a negative reaction to it because I don't know what fluent means. And most often when the student's in there working with the client, I mean, the end goal isn't fluency. And so, but I mean, that hasn't happened in years now because I just made up a T-shirt. We really don't have a firm, a defining definition of what fluency is. If you can recognize what they were calling the trained.
The trained speech patterns, yeah.
Then how natural is that? If you can, I mean, how fluent is that? Now there was a nice one. I don't have a problem. I don't view my speech as being an issue. I mean, I remember one, and he'd been out for like, I hope I sounded fluent enough for you. If we'd done this before, when you were in these situations in the past, I just think there's a lot of potential in qualitative analysis. I think there's some exciting things going on though in our field regarding restructuring what we are regarding as evidence in stuttering therapy, and I think qualitative data.
Okay, we just heard the clip of Charlie Osborne from episode 227. We compiled some of his most disfluent moments. We tried to leave in entire sentences so you could hear the disfluencies in context. Eric, what is your position on those clips and what you heard from Charlie throughout the entire show?
I got the sense a bunch of times during that show we did that Charlie's a person who stutters. Now, I will not call Charlie a stutterer. I still think, and I'll always think, that the best judge of whether or not you're a person who stutters is you. You know, so if you call yourself a stutterer, you're a stutterer. If you don't call yourself a stutterer, we have to respect that. It just sounded like a lot of times that he was doing things that a person who stutters would do. For example, when he goes, I, whoa. Now there was a nice one. You know, so he was doing these monosyllables syllabic whole word repetitions. It sounded like he was reacting to these disfluent moments of speech. Like, oh, I have to stop right here. Like, something just went on. And he did say, I don't react to my stuttering. But to me, by him stopping and saying, whoa. Now, there was a nice one. Like, that sounded like advertising or disclosing or acknowledging the fact that, whoa, I just had a reaction to my disfluent speech.
Brief interjection. He was also on Stutter Talk. So I doubt very much he would have done that in a different context. Like, maybe in a graduate class he might have done that where the topic was stuttering. But he knew who his audience was. That's something just to keep in mind. He didn't do that at McDonald's.
And then in the same breath, we could say, well, yeah, it's a more comfortable environment to acknowledge your stuttering.
Well, okay. What are you arguing here? Are you arguing that you think he could be a stutterer? Is that what you're arguing?
I don't really think I'm arguing anything here. Like, I'm saying, I heard a lot of speech and a lot of tendencies that sounded very stuttering alike, specifically when he would have disfluent moments and he would stop and in his own way react to those disfluent moments. Now, like, it is beyond the scope of this show right now to define what stuttering is, you know, but to me, a huge part of stuttering is those reactions, or are those reactions that we have to our speech. And it just felt like at a couple of times during that show, it just felt like he was reacting to disfluent speech. And that's why I made the comment.
Well, I don't mean this to sound challenging, but you're using the word reaction when it's usually meant a different way. So we usually say reactions in the sense of, oh, he's reacting to the stuttering with an eye blink, with a secondary, or he's reacting by avoiding. I think another way to look at it is he was commenting. And again, the context of the show is stuttering. So, and of course, the topic of that show was the issue of what is fluency. So it was very appropriate for him to comment on the fact that, as he said, fluency is a myth. So what's fluency and what is stuttering? So if you keep it all within the context, and if you take the word reactions out and replace it with commenting or noticing, because he didn't react to his stuttering by blinking his eyes. He didn't react. I'm sorry.
Whoa.
I didn't mean stuttering. To disfluency. I'm talking about the example you're talking about.
We were on the telephone. We can't see what he's doing.
But the example you gave was you used the word reactions. In stuttering, the word reaction is used a lot and is usually meant to mean secondary or some type of avoidance or unproductive or productive behavior. But really, he was just commenting about the topic.
Peter, you're saying here that he wasn't eye blinking, for example, okay. But we have no idea
My larger point was just specifically to your point of reactions. Yes, he was reacting to his speech, but I wouldn't want the listener to take that word to mean what is often meant by reactions, which is some type of secondary. What you're saying is by reactions, he was commenting.
Well, I think
and that's the only point I was trying to make. I obviously didn't have a video camera in this room.
Right. No. And I take that point. But I would argue that it's not that different. Like a secondary, something like an eye blink, something like a foot stomp or whatever, head jerk, is not that different from a person stopping, resetting, and then keeping on with what he was saying.
I was to tackle this question, I kind of thought, I don't give much priority to checklists, but I kind of thought, well, let me put together a checklist of what type of things I would be looking for if I were to try the incredibly insane task of diagnosing somebody, labeling somebody from a conversation. Not saying this needs to be done, but we're just sort of exploring this topic here.
Okay.
So one of the things for the checklist is comparing the speaker's experience to the listener's experience. So, and I know this was just your initial gut comment, but when you called me, Eric, and said, oh, dude, that guy stutters, well, I thought that's the experience of the listener, not the experience. Oh, I know.
Which is exactly what I said initially.
I'm just going through the checklist. Okay. So, stuttering, I always say, is a disorder of talking and of not talking. So, this relates directly to the experience of the listener versus the experience of the speaker. So, if it's an experience of the listener, well, how about loss of control? Well, Charlie said to us either on air or off air that he doesn't experience a loss of control. And Bob Quisel and others have said that at its core, stuttering is a loss of control. So if you do not experience that loss of control, I don't know if that's the only important factor, but it would certainly be on my checklist. Do you, the speaker, experience a loss of control? Well, Charlie Osmond would say, no, I don't. Or at least that's what I think he said. As far as the actual speech, he had repetitions. I don't believe I heard part word repetitions. So there are single syllable whole word repetitions, which is one part of stuttering, but there were no part word repetitions. There were no noticeable long prolongations or silent, inaudible or audible blocking.
I just want to quickly say, with those monosyllabic whole word repetitions there, they were exceedingly fast.
So for my checklist for stuttering, I would think blocking is a very important component. Doesn't mean the person has to block, but it would be on the checklist. So if we're going to do a typical checklist where we just say, oh, if 8 out of the 12 are checked, he's a stutterer. Let's just pretend. Well, blocking would be on my checklist as one of the possibilities.
But we rarely hear you block on the show ever.
I think it's not bragging when I say that I've been working on my stuttering for a long time. Yeah, no.
Okay. That's not the issue, though. Right. Like, I'm just saying, if you're just talking about the observable speech, you don't block on the show. He's an older gentleman.
It would only be one minor point on the large checklist.
Fine.
Responses and reactions to stuttering, and there's a lot of them. Avoidances and hiding. Do you avoid speaking because of the possibility that you may stutter? Fillers. Do you use fillers or starters because of the possibility that you may stutter? Do you experience shame, embarrassment, or guilt because of stuttering or disfluencies? Do you anticipate that your speech is going to get stuck, whether you want to call that disfluency or stuttering or whatever? So I think those are lots of checks on the checklist. He would probably say, no, 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 no. I mean, maybe he would say, I'm embarrassed when I have disfluencies, but I do not think there'd be shame. I do not think there's avoidances. I do not think there's fillers that can be directly related. So I think all that stuff is really important. Quality of life. I would be surprised if Charlie Osborne said, I haven't met my life's goals because of my disfluencies. I didn't become a lawyer because of my disfluencies. I'd be really surprised. I'd be really surprised if Charlie said, you know, I really wanted to date this girl in college, but I didn't ask her out because of my excessive amounts of disfluencies. I don't think he would say that.
And we will have Charlie on, can address all of the... Right.
And this is why we're doing this now. We're putting it all out on the table so Charlie can address it. Variability. Well, we all know that stuttering is variable. I would even say it's possible that normal disfluencies are variable, but I doubt very much that Charlie's disfluencies are variable in the same way that stuttering is variable. So I think that's another very important piece on the checklist. I might have already covered this, but handicapping effects. I doubt very much that Charlie feels handicapped or held back because of his normal disfluencies. Or if he does, I would assume they're in a very minor way. Secondary behaviors or learned behaviors. I doubt that Charlie has learned new disfluencies, new ways of being disfluent because of how he is disfluent. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe his disfluencies have changed over time in reaction to the initial disfluency. My guess is he would say no, but we'd have to ask him. Is there a genetic history of stuttering? That would be on the checklist. Obviously, there are people who stutter who do not have a genetic history, but it'd be interesting to know if Charlie did. Does Charlie fear specific sounds, or does he feel that specific sounds or letters or symbols are simply harder for him to say than others? And that is my initial checklist. I'm sure I can make it much longer if I really tried.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter Reitzis and Eric Jackson here with our friend, good friend, expert on stuttering, Charlie Osborne. Charlie, what did you think of the conversation?
Well, I guess first I have to say, is this what it feels like being a client? I've never
it, it can. It can, yes. Yeah.
It's a little bit... intimidating, I guess, is a good word when you know people are dissecting the way that you talk, and I think, well, geez, we do that a lot with our clients. Anyhow, that was my first personal reaction to it was that. But then I really do think this is an important topic about. I mean, are we talking about stuttering? Are we talking about disfluency? And what does, I mean, I don't think we can cover what fluency means, but certainly, I think I'm a good example of a pretty disfluent, non-stuttering individual. That's how I perceive myself, and I think that a lot of the things that you guys discussed are good topics to go for, so I'll throw it at you guys to decide what you want to talk about first.
Well, I just want to jump in and say that if I understand you correctly, you sort of felt, I don't want to say like a guinea pig, but sort of like in the spotlight, had a lot of attention thrown upon you, and that can be uncomfortable. Is that fair to say?
I'd say you just pretty much hit the nail on the head, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is such a wonderful point. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that we give our graduate students assignments like to go out and use voluntary stuttering in public, to go out and use speech tools in public, because it's until you are actually in the shoes of the person who stutters, at least a little bit, you might not know what that feels like. And I have felt like a guinea pig. I have people approach me all the time to ask me to participate in research studies. And sometimes I'm asked in a way where it makes you feel like a piece of meat. And I certainly have never felt that.
I feel like that a lot of, when I go out, Peter.
Okay. And the thing is, Charlie, I think that from knowing the conversations we've had, I feel a lot of empathy from you and a lot of respect that you have for people who stutter. And it's interesting that, you know, I don't know if you've ever felt like that before, Charlie, where you feel like all of a sudden you're in the spotlight and people are talking about you and playing around with diagnosing you, even though we were doing so kind of lightly. And it sounds like that was a pretty good experience, right?
Well, it was an interesting experience. I think I usually try to avoid that. If I can, but I think in this circumstance, I really do think that the message that is hopefully coming out as a result of this, that if you speak, you are going to be disfluent at times, that's an important message.
I would just like to jump in here and say that it's almost a moot conversation here in the sense that Charlie has said and said again on this show that he's not a person who stutters. I think when you're passionate about something and when you're excited about something and when you could possibly have another member of the team, I say that jokingly, but I was listening on the other end of our initial conversation and there were times in the conversation where I felt a discomfort while speaking while those disfluencies were happening. So it's kind of like we hear a lot of times that stutterers might be overly sensitive to that. There were just a couple times that I like felt what, you know, could have been stuttering or what sounded to me and felt to me like stuttering. And that was the only reason why I made that point to Peter after that initial recording. I just wanted to ask you one question, Charlie. And it's kind of just out of curiosity. Do you have a family history of stuttering by any chance?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
But you're not the first person, though, that, has asked if I stutter. And because I know that because I listen to myself a lot, there are many times the disfluencies that I use would be considered or categorized as stutter-like disfluencies. And in that last conversation, talking about the rapid the number of iterations and the kind of the speed, and I don't know how to account for that except, and I wish I had the article. I looked for it before this discussion. I could not find it. There was an article I read once that talked about fluency as being on a continuum, and they suggested that perhaps just like for people who stutter, there's a continuum of stuttering. There are some people who stutter who are over on the far end who stutter quite severely. And then on the other end, there are some people who stutter very mildly. But even a person on that end could have such a significant reaction to that mild stuttering that it causes a problem. And then the authors suggested, just like that, maybe there's a continuum for people who don't stutter. And that at one end there are the people, and I'm sorry, I'm going to say this anyhow, for anybody who's out there who's not very disfluent, there's the one end, the weird people who hardly ever make any mistakes. Well, you can't even call them mistakes, who are very fluent most of the time. And then there's the other end of the continuum. This is a person who doesn't stutter, but can be even more disfluent than someone who does stutter at times. And I think that on both continuums, I think we move back and forth depending on the situation, depending on your state, whether, like you'd mentioned, excitement or fatigue or whatever. I guess that's how I account for, I guess, how sometimes I can sound like I stutter. I'm over at that far end.
You know, Charlie, I want to read you a quote, and I can't remember where I got it from, but Joseph Sheehan said this, and quote, "The problem of stuttering cannot be adequately defined in terms of disfluency counts or speech interruptions. Stuttering is always the problem of a person. Unless we understand the person, we will not understand the problem." So let me ask you this. For some people who heard that clip we put together of your speech, they might just sit back and think, oh, that sounds like stuttering. That is stuttering. Can you help us understand the basic points of why you are not a person who stutters?
Well, I think that they might think that, and it might be a valid assumption on the listener's part. And going back to the quote that you just said, you're completely ignoring, how about the person who's doing the speaking? Does the person experience loss of control? Well, I don't experience loss of control. I mean, I think it goes, and it's really interesting that so many, in fact, the vast majority of programs that we have, what do they base their measures of success on? Percent of stuttered syllables. And who's doing the judgment? It's the listener. And I guess, you know, I know this is the ongoing theme in your show, too, but, I mean, that's huge. You know, for me, and I've had people come up and say, oh, yeah, so I'm a person who stutters, too. Nice to meet you. And I have to say, well, you know, I may sound like I'm stuttering, but I don't consider myself someone who stutters. That was just, you know, whatever the circumstance was, I was a little more disfluent than typical for me. I don't know if I've answered that. I really do think it's the speaker's experience, and it's that sense of loss of control that lies at the root of, do I stutter or don't I stutter?
So, talking about the loss of control, and obviously we both agree with you. I think I can speak for you here, Peter, that that the experience of the person and the experience of the loss of control is mostly what we should be looking at.
Yeah, and I just want to add, and I this might sound like a little cute, but, you know, and we also would assume that doesn't mean you ever felt like you had control, because I can't ever feel, I don't ever remember being, feeling in control of my speech at all. I don't ever remember being able to count on my ability to get my message across until I was well into my 20s. And I learned that from speech therapy and self-help.
And that leads, and that leads right into my point, which is that is it possible, Charlie, that in those particular moments that we referenced on the show, that there was some kind of feeling of loss of control, but it just wasn't enough to be considered stuttering?
Wow, that's a really good question. I wouldn't go as far as saying experiencing loss of control. For me, it's more I'm not paying as much. You know, if I just kind of let loose and not really do a lot of attending to how I'm talking sometimes, I'm a little more disfluent. And, you know, depending on the situation, if I don't care, it's like, so what? I mean, speaker's fine. It's the listener's problem. But then there are other times. For example, one of the part of my job is we work at a hospital. There are three of us that do hospital rotations as a part of the university. We have a contractual agreement. Anyhow, when I'm over at the hospital, I'm using speaking controls, and the only reason I'm doing that is because I know that if I'm like my regular disfluent self, that I may be perceived as being less competent, right or wrong. I just know that's the case. And so I typically will use speaking controls when I'm working at the hospital. It doesn't even require a whole lot of thought on my part, because it's like the hospital is this big cue to remind me, oh, yeah, I'll use speaking controls so I sound competent. But in regular things, you know, I really don't care. And so I don't, it's more of a sense of, it's not a, it has nothing, in this idea of control, I don't always feel like I have a firm grip on the reins of how I talk, but when I am more disfluent, it doesn't, I don't experience any kind of angst. Did I answer that?
Yeah, this is a great topic, and I want to bring up that I've been working with a group of 10 and 11-year-old children, and one of the things we've been – and they stutter. And we've been working on speaking strategies, but not speaking strategies for stuttering. So we've been talking about great speakers like President Obama, like the minister or the priest at Sunday school who they think is a good speaker. And we've been trying to figure out what makes them stand apart from other speakers. So my students will make lists like talk slowly, know what they're talking about, don't fidget. When they use a gesture, it's because they mean to. It's not accidental. And so we've been working on these non-stuttering speaking strategies, and I found that that's a good way to work towards the stuttering speaking strategies. And my students love it. They love realizing that everybody could benefit from some type of speaking strategy.
And what you're talking about, Peter, here is is the idea of attending to what you're doing right while speaking, like what Wendell Johnson and Dean Williams and those guys spoke so much about?
Well, sure, and also attending to what you're doing that gets in the way. Like when we were doing these really fun presentations in speech class, and one of my students was standing up and giving a presentation, and he kept leaning over to put a pretzel in his mouth. Well, we just had a good laugh when he was done that perhaps interrupting your presentation to put food in your mouth and then have your presentation be interrupted by chewing might not be the best use or the best way to present your ideas. You know, so it's not only what they're doing right, it's what they're doing that's getting in the way of effective communication. Charlie, on the show that Eric and I recorded and we just played, I put together a quick checklist. It was not complete, but there was a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. So as far as issues like variability, I'm curious, do you notice any type of variability with these disfluencies of yours that sometimes sound like stuttering?
Absolutely. I think just like anybody, this is one place I really don't delineate a person who stutters from one who doesn't. I mean, there is a hierarchy, and there are hierarchies of speaking situations that for some people are going to, that I think that some people, okay, I'll give an example, let me start over. That the Speech 101 class that everybody looks forward to when they're in college, and I just remember in mind, I remember one fella, or this was a young woman, and she's up there and she was doing a very nice job. And at this time, I wasn't even into communicative disorder, so I don't know how disfluent she was. But the one thing I noticed was she started developing all these red blotches on her neck. I mean, she was so nervous that she was starting to break out. And then there was another fellow that was in the class, and this poor guy, he shook the whole time he did his speech. But, I mean, he just didn't, his hands just didn't shake. I mean, he shook. His whole body was shaking. He was having such a hard time. And then I think then there are some people, instead of shaking or blotching, they become more disfluent. I think it's just, you know, maybe it's the way we're put together neurologically. But so I think in answering that question, I again think that there's a continuum. I mean, there are situations, you know, sometimes I'm talking to my dogs and I'll hear myself repeat something and I'm like, now what's up with that? Why am I being disfluent with my dog? But, yeah. but it depends. I guess it depends on the situation. Certainly a level of interest about a topic like the one we're having right now, lends itself, for me to be more disfluent, but again, if I cared about it more, I could start using my speaking strategies if you would like, and I'd sound like this.
How about you keep those controls for a minute, and I can ask you a few more questions?
That was hysterical, Peter.
Yeah, sure thing. So as far as responses to your disfluencies, do you have any that you're aware of? I mean, I don't, my gut is you're not avoiding talking because of your disfluencies, but do you have any responses at all to your disfluencies?
Well, and I hope you have a counter so you can tell me how fluent I am afterwards.
But Charlie, if I did, we'd all have the same counters and we'd all disagree about the final outcome anyway. So, but anyway.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Okay, do I? No, I really don't have any kind of reaction now. In listening to your discussion, when you were talking about that, I did make a note saying that I oftentimes will stop and comment on what I'm doing But I do that all the time when I'm in therapy with a young child. If I'm in a therapy, oops, lost control there. How do I phrase that now? Dropped out of control. But, and even with adults, because I want to model a non-emotional response to disfluency or to disfluent speech. So I try to model the way I respond or the way I'd like to encourage them to respond when they hear themselves stuttering. And it's just more of a matter of fact. Did you hear what I just did? Whoa, listen to that.
And do those reactions, Charlie, or those comments, do they change in different environments? In other words, when you're in a speech clinic, when you're on Stuttered Talk, the focus is about stuttering. When you're out in the real world, would you, one, make similar comments, and two, would you feel a little bit more out of control if you weren't in this type of speaking situation?
Out in public, just where, I mean, there's not this focus on fluency or stuttering, I don't make comments.
Yeah.
Unless it's to someone that I know. Now, the comment I made when I said I hope I was fluent, and I said, oh, damn, it was because of all the things that made us fluent on, the word fluent, you know?
That's, right, yeah.
That's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah. Well,
but
I mean,
no.
We just had Jane Fraser on the podcast, and she commented that the word stuttering seems to be hard for so many people who stutter. And that's been my experience. So you ask somebody, so why are you here today? And they sort of smile because they know that stuttering is a word that often gives them trouble, that they have a hard, that they feel they have a hard time saying. So Charlie, here's my big question for you. And I'm not going to answer it first, but I will answer it at some point. Do you think we can define stuttering? I mean, is stuttering definable?
Where are you going right now, Peter?
I'm asking Charlie a question that I think is the key to what we're talking about here.
Charlie, you're saying
you're not a person who stutters, and I agree with you. And Eric and I are saying we are people who stutter. But can we reliably define stuttering?
I think if we're focused on a specific individual, maybe we can. I just saw a new client, an adult client, who was self-referred, who's covert. And out of the four of us that were in the room, I'm sure that this individual, probably from a strictly a fluency standpoint, was the most fluent person in the session.
Yeah, and I'm glad you... I'm sorry, please go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I was going to say that the way you talk now is much more disfluent than when I went to therapy for the first time when I was 21 years old, where I sat down and for a half an hour hid my stuttering. So I'm glad that you brought that point up. But please, I'd like to hear the rest of that story.
Well, in that, well, of course, again, and I brought this up to the individual who is the individual client. I said, you know, if we sat down and did a fluency analysis on everybody's speech rate, and I said, I would be the one that everybody would want to put in therapy. And I was, intentionally, I wasn't being disfluent on purpose. How do I say this? I wasn't intentionally producing disfluencies. I was just letting my speech go and letting it do its natural disfluent thing. Because I think that I tell students this, especially ones that are a little more disfluent than others, I say, you know, you have a lot of potential as a fluency clinician. I do think that being disfluent and being able to show what I consider just regular, you know, comments about my speech without any kind of an emotional reaction, I think is a strength for me in the therapy room. With the young child, I mean, here's another case where a parent was talking about this child's good speech and bad speech, and she referred to bad speech as everything, any kind of disfluency the kid did. I felt so sorry for him. And, you know, I said, you know, if this is bad speech, I'm a bad... And this, I told the mom this. I said, you know, this good and bad. I said, I'm a little concerned about that. I said, because if what you're considering is bad speech, you're going to consider me a bad talker, too. Repetitions are bad. I really don't like that, the two-valued orientation, especially that we seem to have in fluency therapy sometimes. Fluency is good, disfluency is bad. And I think it's a crock.
I would like to go back to your question, Peter, even though I ridiculed you for asking it.
I'm sorry.
I think from a general sense, a general perspective, it's really, really hard to define what stuttering is. And as Charlie mentioned, I think on a case-by-case basis, it gets a lot easier. And listening to this conversation right now, it seems to me that from a therapeutic sense, it might be more beneficial to view stuttering along the lines of a continuum and of stutterers not being categorically different from people who do not stutter.
Well, I mean, that's a huge question. I mean, if we're going to label people who stutter and people who don't stutter, then we are saying there is a difference. I mean, I love, Charlie, what you said about looking at the individual's experience. I mean, my individual experience is I grew up miserable because I did everything I could to hide my stuttering. And I did it so well that a girlfriend of mine in my early 20s thought I was mentally ill when I told her I was stuttering and I needed help. And she thought I was literally mentally ill just trying to get attention. And I didn't know the term covert stutterer or successful covert stutterer at the time. So I would say to you, I don't know, Eric, a definition I would give myself, but I think that my experience was very different than the experience of the, quote, normal speaker.
I just think that there are so many people out there, though, especially those people who we don't know about, who may not have had as intense reactions to it as we have, but have had reactions and are having reactions. And I think from a personal standpoint, it makes me feel better to say that I am different from a person who doesn't stutter. And it kind of helps me make more sense of this thing that I have and I'm trying to deal with and I'm trying to manage. But part of me just thinks from a larger perspective, like, is it that different? And do some people just have way more intense reactions to it, which lead to more intense reactions during the course of their life, and it really becomes a problem, like the problem is compounded by the problem?
Well, let me say this, Eric. I think you're getting into the whole topic of, is there such a thing as mild stuttering? And I know we're going to talk with Bob Quisel about this in about 2 weeks. So I'd rather not into the conversation now. But Charlie, if you have a sort of a thought to close out this conversation, this topic that Eric and I are going to be speaking much more about in the coming weeks, is there anything that you'd like to say to what Eric just said?
Absolutely, because I think that there is a difference. I think you're both right. I mean, there's stuttering and then there's not stuttering. But I think one of the things, I know even when I'm working with young children, I get them to listen. I teach them terminology. I mean, you know, we don't use repetition, prolongation, and blocks, but we use terminology where they begin to are good at identifying it in my speech, then I encourage them to listen to their parents and listen to their family and other people. And what happens, and because disfluency is a part of talking, I think disfluency becomes a little more normalized for them. So when they do hear themselves, they have a context to place it in. Okay, there is a difference, I mean, between a hard or a real tense pause and an easy repetition. But when we have these terms and we're able to talk about them like we'd be talking about the color on the wall or something, I mean, with no emotion, it's much easier to deal with. And I think as a child who's emerging awareness about the way they talk, that having that kind of perception that disfluency exists in just about everybody who talks, it doesn't make them feel like they're the odd man out. And so I do, yeah, there is a difference, but you know what? I mean, it'd be a really big distinction to say, I stutter, and I have a lot of disfluent speech, and those people who don't stutter don't, because that just isn't so.
And I guess what I'm mildly proposing here is that the fact that we have a profession for speech language pathology, the fact that we have stuttering treatment, on some level that could give the perception that people who stutter, people who don't stutter, are categorically different from each other. But take all of that out of the mix, and obviously we can't, but if you could take all of that out of the mix, it's like, well, would we view it as people who stutter and people who don't stutter are not really that different? I mean, I'm not completely sold on that point, but this conversation especially is making me think a little bit more about it.
Yeah, it's a good conversation. I'm going to bow out of it for now because we are going to dedicate an entire show to it in the coming weeks with Bob Kweisel. Can I share with you guys a funny story?
Sure.
I just assigned a student of mine who's 11 years old the Joseph Sheehan chapter from Advice to Those Who Stutter. It's a short chapter. It's wonderful. Even though my student might be considered young, he can definitely understand the major points. So I was telling him, you know, there's one thing I want to share with you about the chapter before you take it home. It's this great iceberg theory of stuttering that Sheehan had. So I drew a blank iceberg on a piece of paper, and I was about to explain to my student that Sheehan thought that stuttering is like an iceberg, that the part you hear, the tip of the iceberg, the part you hear, the part you see is very minor, but the big dangerous part of the iceberg is the part you don't see, the part under the waterline. So before I can even get to that explanation, my student said, oh, I know all about this iceberg theory. So he took my pencil, he was very serious, and he wrote in the top part of the iceberg, the tip that you could see, he wrote, people who stutter are smart. And then he wrote underneath something like, people who don't stutter aren't as smart. And that was his iceberg theory of stuttering. And I was debating, should I correct him or should I just let him believe that? But he was convinced that was the iceberg theory of stuttering. So I thought that was kind of funny. That's not to insult you, Charlie. That was not my point. Anyway, he sort of was demonstrating some stuttering pride when I was not expecting it. Okay, screeching halt. Charlie, was there anything about this conversation that you did not have the chance to share that you wanted to put on the table?
I think I've put all the cards on the table that I was hoping to. Thanks.
Excellent. Well, let's wrap things up then. I would just like to make the statement that although Peter's team in our fantasy football league has showed some promise in the beginning of the season, you are in store for a nasty decline.
You know, Eric, there's a saying in poker. Charlie, are you a poker player?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Okay. So my dad is a professional poker player. He's been one my whole life. And he used to say to me, we'd play when I was a kid and I'd ask him a question. And he would say, you don't give poker lessons at the table. And sometimes I feel, Eric, that you're fishing for fantasy football advice from me. And let me just say, let me just finish the statement, Eric. I do not give advice at the table. So well, at the end of the year, if you would like to have a conversation about strategy, we can do so.
You've been listening to Stuttered Talk. Special guest, Charlie Osborne. Charlie, thanks for being a part of this whole little mini-series of shows. And if it felt like you were a guinea pig of sorts, then we apologize. But I think it was a healthy conversation.
No apology necessary. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, guys.
Stuttered Talk at stutteredtalk.com. Is our voicemail line working these days, Peter?
It's alive and kicking. We've gotten some messages, not anything we've really wanted to play on air, but some good phone calls. Give us a call at 206-666-5340. 666. I'm going to start that over, Eric. Give us a call, 206-666-5340, and we will listen to your call and consider putting it on air.
Bye.